Well, today we are talking with Dr. Charles Ruprecht to learn more about rabies, the signs and symptoms, and how to treat and prevent it. Dr. Ruprecht has a veterinary degree from Penn, a PhD in biological sciences from Wisconsin, teaches at Auburn now, and he served previously as chief of the rabies section at the National Center for Infectious Disease at the CDC in Atlanta, and as director at the World Health Organization's Collaborating Center for Rabies Reference and Research. Part one of a three-part series made possible by Grifols, a leading global healthcare company. Dr. Charles Ruprecht, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Aaron. My pleasure.
So for this first segment, we're just getting kind of an overview of rabies as a disease and what people should know about it. So what is rabies, just to get us started, and what causes it?
Great question, Aaron. So for example, when somebody's talking to you about disease, what first comes to your mind?
Illness, I would assume.
Right. And so if I'm talking about different kinds of diseases, what kinds of diseases often come to your mind commonly?
Usually flu, colds, COVID, obviously.
Exactly.
Yep.
So typically when we're in conversation, particularly with parents, we're thinking about measles, mumps, childhood, vaccine preventable. We're thinking about upper respiratory diseases, common cold, flu. But oftentimes, rabies doesn't come to our mind, and that's because it's not a human communicable. Rabies is a basic disease of nature. And when we say that, what we mean is that, you know, as we speak, animal to animal, these viruses are being transmitted among themselves, irrespective of what we're transmitting among ourselves. The disease itself is what we call an acute progressive encephalomyelitis. Basically, what that means is it comes on very suddenly, it gets worse very quickly, and you get an inflammation in your brain and die.
So how widespread is it across the world?
Its distribution across the world is found in almost all continents, with the exception of Antarctica. And who knows, someday it may get there as well. And part of its distribution and our understanding of where it occurs is based on the ability to look for it. Mm. So, for example, the ability to find a disease in nature, particularly one that's propagated by wild animals, is almost like trying to detect the sound of softly falling trees in poorly visited forests. In other words, unless there's an animal that bites us or our pets, oftentimes there is no surveillance for rabies, and because the burden or the amount of impact of this particular disease is heaviest in lower and middle income countries, places where surveillance is less than ideal, the simple answer is we don't really know, because oftentimes the ability to have a laboratory confirmation is limited to highly developed countries such as Europe or in North America. What we believe is that the burden, the number of people who are at risk of exposure to the viruses that cause rabies, is somewhere in excess of 15 million. And there may be reports about how many of those exposures result in death. It may be in a good year, only 20,000 deaths. In a bad year, it could be 150,000 or more. And so people have modeled, based on some reports, as well as the epidemiology of the disease, that the burden of rabies in humans, meaning human fatalities, is somewhere between 50 and 60,000 deaths every year, most of them in children.
And to say 20,000 is a good year really drives the point home of how serious it is. How have the trends in rabies transmission and cases of rabies been developing? Have we seen an increase, a decrease? How have things gone in recent years?
Yes, we see a variability in the rate or the number of animals reported, primarily in areas where we have a breakdown in basic government infrastructures and biomedical services. So for example, in war-ravaged areas, whether that be in the Middle East and Eastern Europe, we see rises in cases of rabies, one, because you don't have the ability to vaccinate dogs, And two, you don't have the ability to educate people about how to prevent themselves from exposure. And critically, you don't have the biologics, the critical medicines to be able to administer to people after they've been exposed. And so in places like Eastern Europe and Ukraine, where previously the disease was prevented, and we're not really thinking about rabies in dogs in Europe, we're seeing dramatic rises in such areas. In other places, such as in the United States, rabies is common. You go ahead and look at the news almost any day, and you've got a rabid bobcat tangling with the family dog. You have people being attacked by rabid beavers and woodchucks, which is very unusual because rodents typically aren't affected, even though all mammals are susceptible to being infected. In the developing world, it's primarily dogs who aren't vaccinated. In the developed world, such as the United States, it's in wildlife, raccoons, skunks, foxes, and bats.
Speaking with Dr. Charles Ruprecht, expert on rabies, talking about the disease and how to prevent it, part one of a three-part series made possible by the healthcare company Grifols. So what are some myths about the disease? People know a little bit about it, but there's a lot of misinformation out there too, right?
Sure. One of the myths out there is that rabies is a candidate for eradication. Now, there's only been two diseases that have been eradicated, smallpox and a veterinary disease of livestock rinderpest. Rabies is not a candidate for eradication as a basic disease of nature. Rabies can be prevented, it can be controlled in animals, but it can't be eradicated because you're always going to have the backdrop of wildlife that serve as the reservoirs for this disease. So that's one myth, that rabies is no longer around with us or has been eradicated or can be eradicated. Another one, of course, is the disease is no longer important. We've been very fortunate in the US and other highly developed countries that we've been able to eliminate dog-to-dog transmission. And dogs are responsible for most of the cases of human rabies around the world. So just because we've been able to eliminate the disease in dogs by vaccinating our pets and breaking that major cycle, we still have reservoirs of the disease, such as raccoons, skunks, foxes. And as we've just seen, for example, in Colorado, if you have young animals, young puppies that are offered for sale for adoption at some of these swap meets, if they've been exposed, if the mother of the puppies has been exposed to rabies virus, and either she infects her puppies or they're bitten themselves, and the owners don't know this, and the animals are too young to have been vaccinated, and then they get swapped at one of these meets, what happens? We find out that one of those puppies has rabies, and then the rest of that litter have to be killed. So there's obviously tragic consequences in the news every day of a four-year-old boy in India who dies of dog rabies, all the way to a highly developed country and state like Colorado that's being impacted by rabies. So that's another myth, that the disease is not important. One of the common ones you might hear, at least when I was a kid, that you've got these painful shots that are administered in the stomach. Well, rabies vaccines were never administered in the stomach. In the past, our vaccines were not very effective, and so you had to use very large volumes, and they tended to be made from the brains of animals that we infected with rabies, and then just like Pasteur, were administered over our abdomen in very large volumes. So it was over the abdominal, the stomach area, not into the stomach, but into the skin and tissues around it. And that was another common myth, that you have to get shots in the stomach. Modern rabies vaccines are administered the same as all others, and just in a single shot in the upper arm.
Speaking with Dr. Charles Ruprecht, and this is part one of a three-part series. Got to wrap up this first part, but as we do, one of the most important questions, and you've already mentioned the vaccine, how fatal is rabies and how preventable is it with the vaccine?
great question, Aaron. So when we talk about rabies, we're talking about a disease with the highest case fatality of any infectious disease. What that basically means is that if you or an animal start showing signs of rabies, you hope that your bucket list is already completed. You hope that your will is made out, because once signs of rabies appear in a human or in an animal, death is practically inevitable. The case fatality approaches 100%. And so when we're talking about cases of rabies, we're really talking about death. The primary ways to prevent rabies, of course, are to prevent exposure primarily via bite. These are viruses that are transmitted in the saliva. Prevent being exposed at all. And that's one of the reasons why we have this common adage, love your own, leave others alone, such as if you see strange acting animals, to teach children not to approach them, that natural fondness, that affinity to go up to a dog or cat, for example, well, that stray kitten could have rabies. Certainly not to be approaching odd acting raccoons, skunks, or foxes, or if you, for the first time, see what looks like a large spider, it's actually probably a downed bat in the schoolyard, not to be picking it up and showing others and running around with it, because that animal could have rabies, and if you're bitten, we're going to need prompt medical attention. If people are inadvertently exposed to rabies virus, the first thing they want to do is to wash that wound well with soap and water for at least 15 minutes, and then to go ahead and receive medical attention to determine whether or not they need to receive what we call rabies prophylaxis.
And we'll have more on that when we get to part two of our series. This wraps up part one. Again, thanks to Grifols for bringing us this conversation. Dr. Charles Ruprecht, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Aaron. My pleasure.